At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Call it second half. About 20 minutes into the second half, but Casey using the open so we can split things up on the archive. And looking forward to visiting with Steve. I was thinking of Steve Haskin this morning. You heard me say right at the top that, I mean, this is about as cold a morning as we've had. And I went to the cupboard and we made, for the first time this winter, cream of wheat. And you know it's cold. I mean, that the cream of wheat is the go-to when it's this cold. When you need to gird yourself for the day, nothing does it like cream of wheat with maple syrup and raisins. Steve Haskin, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve.
You and I have debated this before, I know.
I gave in. There was no debate. I was an oatmeal person, you know, and then I went back to my childhood days of farina, which is basically cream of wheat. It's just one's rice and one's wheat, but it's pretty much the same. But, you know, I mean, the maple syrup and raisins is fine, but you're not listening to what I'm suggesting, though. You cut up pieces of American cheese.
My father did that,
and it's amazing. The American cheese just melts a little bit in there, and the bland flavor of the cream of wheat just goes so well with that American cheese flavor. It's almost like having grits, you know.
Well, I was about to say that's exactly what it is. I mean, that you're absolutely invoking a cheese grits kind of a experience.
I know, and I know nobody eats it anymore, and it's, you know, verboten. But to me, still, a regular sugar is the best thing in that. I like brown sugar, the dark brown sugar.
Sure.
For the oatmeal, but I like regular sugar, you know, the sugar that people have been eating for 1,000 years that now is supposed to kill you. So I still like the white sugar, the cane sugar in there with my American cheese.
Well,
give sugar, it a shot. What do you got to lose?
Sugar's in big trouble. The sugar may be on the ropes. Tina actually, that's been her 2020. She's going to try to cut out the sugars.
Yeah, I mean, I never use it except, when Joan and I eat out breakfast on Sunday, I always have grits instead of potatoes. But I mean, you can't eat grits without sugar. So that's basically the only time I have sugar, or if I have cream of wheat, I don't use sugar on anything else.
I don't reach for it all that. I think about it. I've got a vinegar coleslaw that calls for like a half a cup, and I've cut that in half. Now I only use a quarter cup. I've tried to trim the sugar.
Well, you know, everybody now, like Joan, always has this stevia, and I know it's all natural, but Any of that stuff, by the way, to me tastes so artificial. Like I cannot eat it.
I don't. Tina uses it in her coffee, stevia. And,
so does Joan. I mean, Joan. Yeah. That's all Joan uses is that. And I know a lot of people that do. And I tried it. It's not. I don't care. It's not sugar. It's artificial. It's got an artificial taste to it. I don't like it.
Well.
So I'll risk it and have a little bit of sugar once in a blue moon.
Well, considering you are a vegetarian, and so there's a lot of other healthy aspects to your approach.
Yeah, well, I've been eating a lot of pasta and eggplant parmesan lately.
Nice.
So I don't know. I don't know about the healthy part of it, but
well, you
actually,
know what? You're
actually,
not far.
Actually, pasta's fairly healthy. I mean, it's nothing. I don't overdo it. I don't eat a lot of it. So
well, we're incorporating, and I was a slow convert. We're slowly converting over to the whole wheat pasta, which.
That's good.
Yeah, I know. I vowed I wouldn't, but I started out doing it in some casseroles and as a, you know, with an ingredient portion, and it made it a little bit. It's made it a little smoother.
It's okay. I prefer regular pasta, but if you want to stay, I just cut down. You know, the main thing is with all this food is you don't overdo it. You can eat anything you want if you don't overdo it. You can eat anything you want.
Good approach.
People all through the 20th century, somehow, I don't know how, but somehow they did survive with milk and sugar and cream and meat and your steak. They did survive. I mean, so I don't know how they did it. I mean, you know, putting all that so-called poison in you now, it's, you know, everything, as I think it was in Annie Hall, as Woody Allen said, everything your parents told you was good for you now is terrible for
it's
you.
It's true. The pendulum has swung back the other way.
Do you know how many times, do you realize how many times Wally and the Beaver come home from school and the first thing they do is have a big glass of milk, and sometimes even more. They'll finish a big glass of milk and they'll pour another one in there. And they're both still alive. If it's good enough for Wally and the Beaver having all that milk.
Fair point.
Yeah, so... I don't know. Yeah. Who knows what's good and who knows what's not good anymore? You know, every week there's a study. Every week there's a study coming out with don't eat something that I'm eating.
Exactly. What are you doing? How about Theo? How was his holiday season? You got to spend
some
time?
Theo was, he came here and, you know, we discovered, unfortunately, as soon as he got here, that morning they had had him in the urgent care because he had this hacking cough and slight fever, and they gave him an antibiotic. And I said, oh, you know, I mean, the thing is, leading into Christmas, the one thing I was, you know, praying for was that, you know, Theo was not get sick because, you know, he gets sick like a lot of kids that go to daycare and, you know, exposed to other kids. But I got to tell you, he never, ever acted sick. I mean, he didn't have any fever here, but I mean, he had a great time. He had a great time. I miss hearing the words from when he's upstairs and he's calling for pop. That's me.
Well, but at least having him
here was just incredible. I mean, we just had so much fun with him, and it was so nice, you know, having a little child opening up presents again. And I brought out, if you're listening, Casey, I brought out Casey from the garage that had been in the garage for 32 years. Casey is a wooden rocking horse that Joan's sister and brother-in-law's acquaintance, who's a carpenter, built, and it's spectacular looking. I mean, he built this incredible rocking horse, and we gave it to Mandy at Christmas when she was three, maybe two and a half, actually. And she would ride Casey all over. And the thing is, we named him Casey because Joan's brother and sister-in-law is named Cal and Ken, so it's K and C. So we named the horse Casey. And then, of course, Mandy outgrew him, and we had him stuck in the garage behind a million different things. And he was in the garage for 32 years. And, you know, Theo is going to, you know, he's not two yet, but he'll be two in February. And we brought him out, and I got pictures of him on Casey, and I put him in an album right next to the pictures of Mandy on Casey. And I got pictures of Mandy and Theo riding Casey at the same time, and it was wonderful. I mean, so that was very special. But you know, he got tons of books, and I bought him something, by the way, that kids don't get anymore. You know, he's got all these pads, you know, things that light up and make all this noise, and you press a button and the piano plays every song on Earth. You know, all these interactive things. I did something that people don't do anymore. I bought him blocks. Remember those?
Yeah. I love it.
Just regular, different colors, different shapes, and he had a great time. Except he's a little, you know, he's a little backwards on him right now. Instead of building, he likes knocking him down. So I would, you know, we would start building things, and he just as long as it was more than two or three on there, boom, it was gone. He liked knocking him down, but he had a good time with him. But I thought that was a little out of the box these days to actually buy something that kids can play with their hands and not have lights go off. And but you know, they have all these animals that talk to you now. We bought him, or Joan actually ordered it. It's a chipmunk. Sort of a chipmunk or some kind of squirrel. No, yeah, it was a chipmunk, I guess. And if you press his little paw and the light goes on, he repeats everything you say.
Right, they tape. Yeah, tapes, and I've seen that. I've seen these kinds of things.
Yeah. So we bought him a little ornament of El. He loves Elmo. And we bought him he's got an Elmo that talks, and an Elmo that dances, and an Elmo that does everything, and a little ornament of Elmo that talks. So, you know, we've got all these other things that that talk. We have we got him earlier, it's Mother Goose, you know, with her eyeglasses and a little bonnet and everything. And, I mean, she has, like, conversations with you, you know. I mean, she's like a teacher. It just goes on and on. How many words they have, and then we got a peekaboo bear where it holds up a towel in front of his face, and then he lowers it and it goes peekaboo, and it starts I see you and talk. I mean, these kids nowadays, they're used to being talked to by inanimate objects. So I thought blocks would be appropriate.
Get some next. Get him some Tinker toys. Legos, Tinker Toys. What about Lincoln Logs?
Yeah, remember Log Cabins?
Lincoln Log.
Yeah. Lincoln Logs, yeah. Loved Lincoln Logs. There's not much you could do with them except build the same log cabin over and over. Tinker Toys, I don't even know if they make them anymore.
Oh, they must. Of course they do. Absolutely they do.
I don't know.
Oh, sure. Tinker Toys. You can't beat that. Skyscraper, make a robot.
Mandy loved Legos and Light Bright. We make things with
Light Bright.
Light Bright. Oh yeah, she loved those.
Spirograph.
Now everything is action heroes. You know, dinosaurs and monsters and zombies, and you know, it's hard to shop for little kids anymore.
Well, we had the three children of my one of my god. Daughters. I've got three godchildren, the Hubbard kids from Hamilton, and Sammy and Emma came, and Emma's got three, including Nora, the youngest, who is, I mean, literally Shirley Temple. It's unbelievable. And then the two Logan they're just a delight. And so Tina and I, you know, we did the shopping and got, you know, got the kids' presents, and it was so much fun. And in fact, Nora went upstairs. We've got a hobby horse and a radio flyer hobby horse, and Nora found it and named Liberty, and she got on Liberty. She was riding, and it was pretty fun.
Nice.
I put a video up actually. It's really cute. No, it was fun. And of course, we're now less than 60 days away from from Zachary's wife getting, she's getting close with her. She's got a girl on the way. And so.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
We're going to Rochester. Not that we're going to Cincinnati this weekend, but we're going to Rochester next week for the shower. So.
Oh, you really going to? Just for the shower? Okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And in fact, we're catering the shower with Wegmans. We're ordering all kinds of food from Wegmans and from the catering.
Scrambled egg sandwiches.
Not the egg sandwich, but although it is a morning, it is a 10 o'clock. The thing starts at 10 o'clock. It's like 10 to 2.
There you go.
So I guess I could bring in some of my egg sandwiches.
By the way, you know who got the greatest Christmas present? I don't know if he's listening or not. Or if,
Lenny?
Or,
Lenny.
No, no. Or if Rhoda is listening. Avi. you ready for this, by the way? Avi got a walk-on role in Lion King on Broadway. He was on stage.
Oh, how fun.
He sent pictures of him, you know, with all his makeup on. I mean, he's decked out into this some, like, cannibal or something. I don't know what it was. But, you know, he went through all these rehearsals, you know, for choreography, where to be and everything. And he actually was on stage in The Lion King. You believe that? And he had the whole family there.
How fun. That's great. I see that for sale on, you know, there'll be those silent auctions. In fact, yesterday we talked with Aaron Crady about the Stallion auction. And, you know, I see those occasionally. You know, a non-speaking role or a, you know, a five and under role as a prize.
So cool. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
I mean, the thing is, when you look at everybody else on stage, I mean, you know who it is. So he looks so totally out of place and he doesn't look like, you know, he belongs in a Lion King scene. But, you know, decked out in all the makeup. I mean, just the thought of being on stage.
That's fun.
On Broadway in a show like The Lion King. I mean, that was pretty wild. Did you know, by the way, that Mandy, when she was, let's see, how old was she? Maybe 15, maybe 15 or 16. I don't know, maybe 16 or 17, something like that. She just missed by one. They told her to come back. The woman in charge there told her to come back the following year because she just needed maybe one more year, but she would definitely get it if she came back the following year because she just missed by one of getting a role as one of the ballet dancers in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she just went out and, you know, and tried out for it, you know, and she just missed by one person of getting it. And they told her that they loved her, but she was still, you know, she was on the younger side of the age group, and said come back the following year, and you know, she would probably get on. So if she wanted to come back the following year, she would have been dancing in Phantom of the Opera.
How about that? That would have changed probably the course of her life too. No,
I don't know. I don't know. She never had any aspirations of, you know, becoming a professional dancer. She just loved dancing. But, you know, being a professional dancer, that's a tough profession to pursue.
Sure.
Competition there is furious.
Yeah, just go rent the Black Swan. That'll ward you off a career.
That's true. Yeah, I mean,
I'll send you scurrying for another.
You want a creepy version of that profession? Go right ahead.
Steve, let's morph into some.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Some racing action. That's all right. We got to catch up. We did that. 2 weeks of time off, so we got all of our extraneous stuff conversed. I suppose I should ask you: are you happy with your new cowboy coach?
Yeah. Actually, I you know what? I made that bet with you 1 year too early because I think he's gonna work out. I think he's gonna work. Well, listen, anybody's better than Jason Garrett. I might have looked at somebody a little more dynamic, but he's got, I mean, you know, he's for 13 years, he's been, you know, top quality. He's, you know, how many times he's won a Super Bowl, and I think he'll work well with Dak Prescott, who to me still has the potential to be as good a quarterback as there is. But I mean, you know, it's fun. You know, it's not that I'm a Cowboys fan. I just thought that they looked like an absolute lock to me. I mean, they had the most talented team in the league. Every way you look, they had talent, and they just totally underachieved. They just need somebody to bring all that talent out. So, you know, maybe he's it. But, you know, I've been wanting Garrett out for years. You know, all he does is clap and pat you on the back. He doesn't do anything. But I think next year I might be bold enough to actually make that bet again with you.
Well.
Just don't order the Asabuco. I think it's.
Don't worry. your last appearance. You were very, very confident. I could not believe
that they. You know,
you were,
I mean,
so convinced.
I was convinced. I mean, you know, I mean, listen, Carson Wentz played great, but they squeaked out, you know, overtime wins and 3-point wins over like the dregs of the Eastern Conference there between the Giants, you know, and the Redskins, and they just barely beat them. And then I don't know what happened. I can't believe that. If you told me they were going to score 9 points against the Eagles in that game, I'd say you're out of your mind. I mean, because the Eagles couldn't beat them, and they go into Philadelphia in a game that all they had to do was win, and that's it. They had it locked. That was it. It was over. And they scored 9 points. If you're a Cowboys fan, it had to be very, very frustrating. But you know, like I told you, you know what? In the last week, I started rooting for the Eagles. I said, listen, I'll give up the dinner. But I just had so much all these guys that came along that Greg Ward and
Boston Scott.
Boston, what's the last
Scott.
Name again?
Scott.
Scott, Boston Scott. I mean, I'm looking at these guys. So where did these guys come from? And then there was other wide receivers, and then there were Robert Smith or Robert Davis. I mean, I'm looking at it. So where did these guys come from? And they played great. They played better than the regulars that you would drop them balls every week. So I said, you know what? I mean, they deserve to win. So I mean, I was actually rooting for them.
Well, I appreciate it. We were down there on Sunday, and you know, right up to the end, I thought there was a chance, despite everything that went wrong.
They played great. I mean, again, yeah, you know, having they certainly wish they had Nick Foles, that's for sure. But
you can't complain about
it. Well, I mean,
McCown played
got
very well.
Old backup
that hadn't played all year. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean. You know, it was just tough. They got beat by one score. You know, yep. They got beat a touchdown and a 2-point conversion.
Yep.
So I mean, I thought they played well. I mean, they moved the ball. They just couldn't get in the end zone.
Yeah, that was the difference late. When they I told Johnny when they came out and took the second half kickoff, and they drove the field. When they did not score a touchdown, then I said this is going to cost them the game. That if they had tied things up at that point, it just changes the complexion. But listen,
it must have killed you when Wentz got hurt. I said, I mean, again. And the thing is, I don't care what anybody said. He targeted him. He not sure penalty. He should have been fined and thrown out of the game.
Well, apparently
he went in head first, right on his head.
There's no doubt, and in fact, he should shut up, Clowney, who every time he opens his mouth, he makes himself look
yeah,
worse.
It was a fast play. I didn't want to hurt him. I hope he's okay. You went in. You targeted him. You went in head first. He could have just jumped on the top of him with his head up, but his head went down. He went right into his helmet.
There's no doubt. It was a spearing.
Saying, Carson Wentz, you know, he's injury prone. Listen, there isn't anybody that wouldn't have been out of that game. I mean, he didn't know where he was. But I mean, it's not, you know, he's not, it's not, hasn't, it's not a question of being injury prone. It's not like he tore a ligament or he sprained an ankle or he injured his shoulder. I mean, how do you prevent something like that when a guy goes after you that way? But he got away clean. I couldn't believe that they didn't even call a penalty on that.
Well, that's that. This league, this whole steward. You know, if we equate it to stewards, and that's why when you see people complaining about stewards and decisions and inconsistency and the frustration, this league. They insist.
Oh, they're terrible now.
It's an embarrassment that they've got the option of taking young athletes, guys that are in their 20s and 30s, that that might not be NFL quality players, and guys that but the guys that are fit and young, you could train them as officials and make them full time. Not these sluzzin. Broken down accountants and school professors, school administrators. It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment that they continue.
That should be your job.
Of course it should. Of course it should.
They have the same season, as the football players. But like you said, why should you take people from other walks of life and just try and train? That should be their profession. They should
it's
be
incredible.
Professional officials.
Yep.
But, they're so inconsistent. I mean, you don't know what they're going to do next.
No.
The way they call things on another play, if you go over and just lightly tap the quarterback in the helmet, yep. 15-yard penalty, for roughing the passer. But here, something like this goes completely unnoticed, I don't know. There's just so many bad calls these days. And let me ask you a question. When did you start following football? 80s?
80s?
70s?
Try 60s.
60s. All right, yeah. So I started in the late 50s with the Giants. Yeah, I've been a Giant fan since I was a little kid. Do you remember top players getting hurt? I don't remember anybody ever getting hurt. It's like horses. I mean, when I started following horse racing, horses never got hurt. You start thinking of all the great horses and everything. I don't remember horses getting hurt. I don't remember football players getting hurt. You go back to the 60s. You go back to Unitas and Don Meredith and those Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers. They didn't get hurt. I never heard of an ACL. I never heard of anybody ever mentioning, his ACL is out for the year. I remember when Chuck Bednarik,
played both ways, of course.
Gifford, and he was out for a year. That was the talk of football. Nobody ever heard of a player being out for the year.
There's a couple of things that speak to that, and one is the fitness and the speed at which these athletes are.
That's true.
It's a much more physical. It doesn't seem like it, but it's that much more physical.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you because the guys now, these 300-pound linemen can run as fast as linebackers did back then.
Exactly.
Maybe even running backs. But back then, those guys were tougher. Those guys could get away with anything. You've seen some of the
sure.
You see the way they would hit back then. I mean, everybody had bloody noses, and you look at the famous shots of Y.A. Tittle with his head bleeding. And Johnny Unitas, with his face bleed. I mean, those guys were tough. And you could get away with murder back then. You could do anything.
True.
You look at a guy like Ben Davidson or Dick Butkus. They would tackle you up around the head and twist your neck and your head around and throw you to the ground. I mean, those guys were nasty as heck, and they got away with it. So, I could see where the injuries happen now because these guys are so fast. And they're so big and they're so strong, much stronger. Back then, the tackles weighed 260, 270.
It's an interesting discussion. And at what point it morphed? I would go to like ProFootballReference.com and take a look at some stars and see if they. Back during the 14-game seasons, if they missed, chunks of season. That's an interesting,
yeah,
that's an interesting question.
You know, sometimes your memory deceives you, but I have no recall of being, it's like a horse racing. When I used to watch a horse race in the 60s and 70s, I never went into the race saying, I hope nobody gets hurt. Because nobody did. I mean, at least that I saw, unless I was blind to it. You look at all the great horses in the past. I mean, how many of them, got hurt? I remember it was a big thing when Buck Passer got hurt in his 3-year-old year. But, occasionally a horse obviously got hurt, but it was very rare. And it was the same. No, same with football. I just don't recall players getting hurt. I don't remember hockey players getting hurt.
There's also you also bring in the contracts and how much guys are being paid and protecting of the investment, and if somebody is less than 100%, same thing with the horses. This is an interesting discussion. I would want Johnny's input on this too. Johnny would be a. I'm going to see what he thinks. He's got the advantage of a wide perspective too. We should have this conversation or
we just talk.
I guess we floated it.
Is that the sake of losing our entire audience?
No. Everybody loves this. Everybody listens.
From football injuries to cream of wheat to Broadway and
all counts. Steven, speaking of injuries, or not necessarily injuries, but horses that. Let me fold in a couple of pieces of news. We talked to Richard Mandela on Monday, and he was heading to South Florida for that workout that did not happen yesterday. Pushed back and some heat in the hoof of Omaha Beach. And
Well,
he's not nervous yet, but keep an eye on this.
The Carson Wentz of Thoroughbreds.
Well, and on that, on the topic of time missed, that's a subject that came up this week in these eclipse conversations we've had, because all three 3-year-olds had portions of their season, off on the sidelines and had to deal with a couple of different things, Omaha Beach, of course, with the throat, and then later with some. Hoof issues.
Well, I don't remember Code of Honor getting hurt or anything.
He was shelved long enough post Derby, right? I mean, he between then and the Dwyer, he sat out.
He gave him time.
Yeah,
I still think it was. If you ask me to give an Eclipse Award for the biggest mistake of the year, and I know everybody disagrees with me, it was running Code of Honor in the Breeders' Cup, because you in this game. You go by your gut instinct, and immediately after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and at that point he had a huge shot of being three-year-old champion. But I know it's the big race, and you want to go out there and run and try to get an award or anything like that. But his gut instinct, obviously, his initial reaction after the race was that we're going to give him time off. We're going to bring him back in for the Carter and the Met Mile, which is like way off. So we're going to give him time off. He had a long year. He was running in Florida. I know he missed two legs of the Triple Crown, but, he ran in the Derby. He ran in the Dwyer. He ran in the Travers. Ran in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But, I gave you the statistics that we, three-year-olds going cross-country have no wins out there. They've never won out there. It's so hard for a three-year-old at the end of the year, or any time of the year, to go all the way to California and try and beat all the horses, in a race like this. Never been done. And it was just one race too many. I mean, a horse like that, as consistent as he was all year, to just run around the racetrack, to run on a track where a good portion of the horses ran horribly for no reason at all, horses that were consistent horses. And even horses who got beat that looked like it was the racetrack that beat them, like Omaha Beach and Midnight Bisou, they didn't look like they were handling the racetrack. But I just thought it was a big mistake. And I tell you, I was totally shocked by these comments that I've been reading about Shug talking about the championship and about, you know, being chicken-hearted and stuff. I said, "Whoa, that doesn't sound like Shug at all." So I said, "I don't know if those were taken out of context or anything, but usually Shug doesn't talk, about other horses that way." Actually, you know, when you think about it, if you look at Code of Honor and Maximum Security, they're the same year. All right, they both ran in the Florida Derby, they both ran in the Kentucky Derby, they both missed the Preakness, and they both missed the Belmont Stakes. They both won one of the two major post Triple Crown races, the Haskell and the Travers. They both passed the Pennsylvania Derby, and they both beat older horses in Grade One Stakes. I mean, the same year.
Yeah. No, it was evident.
I mean, nobody really ducked anything. I mean, Maximum Security, had colic. That's why he didn't run the Pennsylvania Derby. And I think the reason he was going to run in the Travers, but I just think that Haskell, having to sit around all day in 100-degree weather and running at 8:30 at night, I think it just drained him. I just don't think he was ready to come back. So he had his problems there. So I don't think anybody ducked any races. So I don't know, I was very shocked by by Shug's comments. It's just very unlike him. Usually, he says, "Well, I'll leave it up to the voters," and he "we had a good year. I think we deserve it." Blah blah blah. But to start knocking the Maximum Security and calling him chicken. I mean, whoa, that's pretty bold statement.
Did you know?
Listen, all three of the finalists. You can make a case for all three of them. I mean, Maximum Security will win. I think deservedly so. But, Code of Honor had a terrific year other than, that faux pas in the Breeders' Cup, which, like I said, in my mind, you shouldn't have run in. And, Omaha Beach, who I wrote a column about how I as much as I love this horse and had him number one as my number one Derby horse for like 6 or 7 weeks, I took little joy in his winning the Malibu, because the better he looks, the more frustrating it is that we're not going to see a horse that could turn into a superstar as a 4-year-old.
Sure.
I mean, he has superstar written all over him, and just the thought of what might have been with that horse, to me, is very frustrating, because I think he's so immensely talented, and there's so many things he can do at any distance. I think, he's a bid type of horse, that he can beat you with 7 furlongs in fast time. He can beat you at 1.25 miles in fast time. I think he can do anything. And the fact that we're not going to see this horse at 4 and he's going to retire sound. So I'm saying if he comes back, if he makes the Pegasus, I don't know what his problem is now, but if he runs in the Pegasus and he wins by 6 lengths, I will get no joy in that at all. It'll make me feel even worse. The better he does, the worse I feel that we're not going to see this horse as a 4-year-old, because there's just no telling how he could have been one of the greats. You don't know, but that's racing now. It happens. It happens so often. You just have to say, "Oh, he could have been there." How good could Justify have been? How good could American Pharoah been? Justify, you can't say anything because he wasn't sound. He had physical problems. But all these horses that retire sound because the breeders jump in, before they even run at 3, and they jump in and they get, they get future controlling interest in it and retire them after 3. So that's the way the sport is now.
Well, that's not an entirely new development.
It's getting worse, though. I mean, it's just getting more. It's getting more prevalent. The thing is, at least with Secretariat, and I know, who knows what he could have been, but at least look what the thing is, if you look at horses now who run in a Triple Crown, win a Triple Crown, whatever, win 2 legs a Triple Crown, who does what Secretariat did after that? He comes right back and runs, 3 or 4 weeks later at Arlington Park, and then he runs against older horses in the Whitney. He runs against older horses in the Marlboro Cup. He runs against older horses in the Woodwood. He runs against older horses in the Man of War. on the grass. He runs against all the horses in the Canadian International. Nobody does that anymore. So, you know, it didn't bother me when he retired. Sure, he would have been great, but we saw what he could have been, you know, in those two grass races at the end of the year. He could have been, you know, one of the great grass horses of all time. And, you know, and he was one of the great third horses of all time, whether he ran a four. But, you know, nowadays, these horses are just on the precipice of greatness, and you can see him. You can see the greatness there, and we just never, all we could do was just speculate and just wonder, you know, what would have happened had they stayed in training. But that's the game now. That's why I concentrate on the three-year-olds, and you just hope for the best.
Agreed. You're not voting these days, correct?
I haven't voted in ages. I'm
right.
Not
that's what I thought.
Awards. You know me. You know, when it comes to the awards or anything.
Understood. Did you have any? I mean, any quibbles with the way, you know, with the way the vote getting lined up?
You mean as far as the finalists?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cut and dry. I don't know who else you could have chosen. I mean, I think everybody. All of the finalists really deserved to be there. I mean, I can't think of anybody that really didn't. I think if I had one quibble, I don't understand how Javier Castellano and Jose Ortiz were on there and not Flavian Pratt. I mean, I thought Flavian Pratt had an Eclipse Award winning. Granted, you know, I read Ortiz is going to win, you know, with his big Breeders' Cup, and he had a great year. But who else? Who had a better year than Flavian Pratt?
No, I voted for Rosario. I thought Rosario did.
Well,
I
would put Rosario in there over Castellano and Jose Ortiz. I mean, they didn't do anything extraordinary. Rosario had a terrific year. To me, the three finalists should be Irad, Flavian, and Rosario. Those are the three finalists.
That I will not disagree. That's a fair lineup.
You know, and as far as all the others, it'll be interesting to see what they do with three-year-old Philly. You know, because obviously, you know, it's the same thing with Mottoli. You know, Covfefe is going to win female sprinter, but do you also give a three-year-old Philly? And I don't know. You can say, well, is there anyone that's deserving? And I tell you, you know, a Philly, if you really look at her, and I don't think enough people are looking at her. I give a lot of credit to Serengeti Empress.
I mean,
to win the Kentucky Oaks and then just get beat, you know, at 7 furlongs in a test in 121-1, and she was third in the Breeders' Cup.
Yep.
And she was second in the Acorn, and was second in a lot of big races. So Gary Empress had, you know, not the greatest year, but I think what she did accomplish was extraordinary. I mean, the versatility to win the Kentucky Oaks. And came very close to winning, you know, to winning the test against the fastest 3-year-old filly in the country. Maybe the fastest filly in the country. I mean, she just ran her heart out. She ran her guts out in that race, you know. And then she comes back, and you know, she ran big in the Breeders' Cup. And I mean, if I had to vote for 3-year-old filly, I would consider voting for her and give Covfefe the sprint championship.
It's just, funny that you couch
just
it
like
this
I,
way.
Just like I would give Vino Rosso the older horse.
And that's what I did with totally
Mottoli
a sprinter.
Sprint, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I agree.
I have nothing against the sprinters, but, you know, champion sprinter is good enough. I mean, if there are horses that are accomplished, you know, two-turn horses, because that's what this country is based on. You know, sprinters are never horse of the year. So, I mean, if you have a horse that's worthy, a two-turn horse, a classic-type horse, a versatile horse that could run all distances, if they're worthy, I'm going to lean towards them over a horse that's a pure sprinter because, you know, they're specialists. They don't go they don't have the versatility. They don't go out of their range, while you get horses like Serengeti Empress that are running, you know, the winning grade ones at a mile and an eighth and running monster races at 7 furlongs and she placed at a mile, running against older fillies, going 2 turns and finishing in the money.
Yep.
So, I mean, to me, I, and I, I don't know how they're going to vote. I mean, you know, I mean, there's a good chance. I mean, they're going to, you know, they're going to vote for, they're going to get cute and vote for Covfefe. And I think one of the reasons are that they're going to ignore what Serengeti Empress did.
Well, it's funny. Johnny and I discussed this on Monday, and Johnny was of the same that same frame of mind as am I typically, where I like to acknowledge and, you know, and give the opportunity for as many, you know, as many sets of connections to be rewarded appropriately. And I was very, very close to sending it in with Serengeti as the 3-year-old filly. And then, you know, just looking at the overall, at the full breadth of the seasons, it really felt like Covfefe had kind of overwhelmed the division. And I know Johnny had this, came to the same kind of conclusion. So I did let go in as Covfefe 3-year-old filly and as sprinter.
Should probably win. I mean, you know, I'm not going to.
Yeah, she's going to win. She's going to win both. But Serengeti Empress, she was literally, I think, one performance. One win away from, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, when it came to the head-to-head, you know, that's another part of this that makes it hard to, you know, it's hard to justify.
So, I know you were surprised to see Maxfield there, but I mean, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, who would you put in the top three over him?
Well, I didn't understand Nodor being shunted aside.
I mean, he didn't win.
He's a head and a neck. Well, he's a head and a neck from being undefeated, and I mean, he, you know, compared to a horse. Not to take away from Maxfield's win, and yes, he won overwhelmingly a maiden race and the stake, but he gets an incomplete on the year. I mean, if you're gonna judge it that way, well, then why wasn't Dennis's moment? Why wasn't his two performances enough?
I wouldn't have been shocked if he was there either. I'm not saying Maxfield. You know, I'm not saying I'd vote for him. I'm just saying I wasn't shocked that he was there. It's not like saying, oh, there was a horse that's clear cut. You know, if you want to put Anodore in there, I'm fine with that too. But I think those horses are interchangeable. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a finalist or not. Because I mean, it's for the amount of good 3-year-olds, the good 2-year-olds we had. You know, it's not a strong showing because a lot of people still don't hold Storm the Court in high regard, which I think is a mistake because I think he's probably a better horse. I mean, the fact that he beat Anodore, who came back and ran a race against a horse that Bob Baffert is absolutely crazy about. But you know, the main thing about Anodore, and you know, again, I'll say this looking ahead as a Derby horse. Because I got to tell you, I am having a very tough time.
Well,
sorting this out, I can't even. I cannot come up with a number one. I would put Maxfield number one if he didn't have so many question marks hanging over him. I mean, I contacted Jimmy Bell, and I know you had Brendan Walsh on. I contacted Jimmy Bell, and you know, he said he's going to keep me informed. But you know, he's down. You know, he's down at Bridlewood, and he's just starting to jog. He's got to go through all the weeks of galloping before he even starts working, and I heard Brendan Walsh says, "Oh, I'd like to get one or two races. I mean, if you get two races in him, it's still four races. I'm not a fan of four races going in there. I know it's been done, but I'm still not a fan of it. And you know, when the trainer says, "Oh, if he makes the Derby, he makes the Derby," I'm not going to push him. Blah blah blah. It's hard to put a horse like that number one. I got to put him somewhere, but it's hard to put him number one. And I'm saying who really deserves to be number one? I'm looking at him, going back and forth. I'm starting to lean towards a particular horse. Again, you can question. You can question any of these horses. You look at Baffert's horses. You know, every week there's a new one. You remember the old days? The old days when Eight Rings was this big horse. Nobody even mentions him anymore. He's not even in training. I don't know what the deal is with him. You know, then Baffert's raving about High Velocity. Then he gets beat by 1,000 Words, and Baffert's raving about 1,000 Words. Now he's got Authentic. I mean, he didn't beat anything. But, you know, a horse that green.
Well, he beat Azul Coast.
Yeah. Well, who I was very disappointed in. I thought that horse was going to be a really nice horse. I thought he was going to be the horse to beat. But, I mean, for a horse to be that green, to do it, you know, what he did, and the fact, you know, he's by Into Mischief out of a Mr. Greeley mare. I said, I don't know this horse. And he's on a lead. I said, this horse is not, he's a very talented horse. He's going to win a lot of races. But, you know, is he a Derby horse? You know, Into Mischief, I think he needs a stronger female family than the one that Authentic has. So, yeah, you start looking at all these horses and you start reaching and, you know, Independence Hall, I mean, you know, he's 1 to 1,000 in his last start. And, you know, he looked okay and he did what he had to do. But, again, we don't know, you know, we don't know what these horses are beating. Dennis's Moment, you know, if he ever finishes a race, either if he doesn't throw his rider or get left at the gate and run around the racetrack, you know, he either looks like a world beater or, you know, or just some horse that finds some kind of trouble in a race. You don't know what to make of him. But, you know, I mean, it's just tough trying to, you know, find horses. I'm saying, you know, you start looking, you say, well, you know, what's wrong with Storm the Quarter? I mean, he's going to be the champion. But, other horses, you know, that I like. I mean, I like Three Technique, and I actually, even though Maxfield beat him fairly easily, I really liked his Governor Morris. I mean, you know, he was coming off a five and a half furlong maiden win. He was five wide going to the first turn. You go five wide in the first turn at Keeneland, and you're in big trouble. You know, and you know, he made a big move to get to the lead, and before he knew it, Maxfield was all over him. And then he ran game. He ran second. He, you know, I think on track is he ran like 40 feet farther than Maxfield did. So I think he's a really good horse. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to lean towards horses that are working. You know, other than Dennis's Moment hasn't worked. Yeah, you know, I don't like horses. I mean, Dennis's Moment hasn't worked since October. You know, the horse that everybody loves, they think automatically he's going to be a dirt horse. And I don't know, Structor. I don't know if he's going to love the dirt. He hasn't worked since October. The hopeful winner, Basin, hasn't run since September. So what do you do with these horses?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I don't want to put these horses in the top 12, and as it turns out that they're having physical problems that we don't know about. So, you know, I'm going to lean towards horses that are working, you know, right now. And I'll tell you a horse right now that, I don't have to give anything away, but a horse that's in consideration, let's say, to be the number one horse, or at least in the top two or three, that a lot of people have forgotten about, is Tis the Law, only because I thought his Champagne was as, you know, other than maybe Maxfield's Breeds Futurity, was as impressive a race. I mean, you know, to go, to beat a really good horse in Green Light Go the way he did, just blow by him and to go a mile in 1:34.3, and I'm going to totally throw out his Kentucky Jockey Club. He was trapped behind horses the whole way, down on the inside, in the slop, and then had nowhere to go, had to bull his way through horses, you know, with changing leads. You know, and he ran gamely. He ran a good third. But I'm going to throw that race out. So he's, you know, he's in consideration. But for as many good horses as we have, and they're all so many talented horses, none of them really grabs you as number one. You know, some years, you know, I love a horse. Like, I loved American Pharoah. You know, loved him from day one, from what I saw. But I'm just waiting. The horses that I do love, they're not, you know, they're injured or they haven't been working. You know, like a horse like Three Technique is never running the stakes. So you're going to gamble if you're going to put him high up, but I've been very impressed. I know a lot of people didn't like his last race because he got a low buyer and he ran slow time, but that that doesn't bother me at all. He won that race without even being touched with the whip, and the track was actually dead that day. But I like what I've seen of that horse, but I don't know. I don't have a number one. And somehow, this is the year where I got to pay no attention to comments on the Derby Dozen, because to try and narrow 30 potential horses that would be fitting for top 12 down to 12, all the comments are going to be filled with, how could this horse not be a number 12? How could that horse not be a number 12? How could you have this horse be ahead of that horse when this horse beat that horse? You know, like if I put Tis the Law right up there and I don't put Silver Prospector, people can say, well, how could you not have, he beat him. How could you not have him up there? Silver Prospector looked okay at best. I mean, didn't thrill me. I don't know. You know, again, Tis the Law, that was his first start around two turns. So you can say, well, you know, he's still unproven at two turns. So there's a million question marks here. So I don't I don't have much time to think about it. Let's put it that way. I got to start working on it next week.
Well, what did you – the one result you haven't discussed at all was the Gulfstream race last week. I had
I was very impressed with that horse. He's a nice horse.
Well, both horses. What about as seen on TV? I mean, there was nothing wrong with the runner-up in there, the two of them.
No, I mean, listen, I don't know if, you know, with all the horses, that with the problems with finding horses, I don't know if I could put those horses in the top 12. Listen, I've seen it on TV. What I loved about that race is the fact that they kept, you know, it's one thing when you've got horses going head-and-head the whole way down the stretch, and, you know, one horse gets the lead and the other horse comes back again. Here, they kept alternating lead. Every stride, somebody else was in front. I think Chancet's a very, very nice horse. I think he is. And I think, as seen on TV, is also a very nice horse. And both these horses could be major players. But they have to take a step up, you know, as far as competition. I don't know if I can find a place for them in the top 12. But I certainly would put them, like, in the top 15. You know, there are other horses that have impressed me in defeat. I'll tell you another one, is that Answer In, who finished second in the Springboard Mile. I was very impressed with that horse, you know, having to cut to the inside in that race. And I thought he was closing well. Again, you don't know how good those horses were, but it was a pretty good field. Another thing, too, by the way, if you watch the Mucho Macho Man in slow motion, you can't see it in the actual, you know, just watching the pan shot. But if you watch the close-up in slow motion, when it looked like, as seen on TV, he had the race, well, it looked like he had gotten his head in front at the right time to win the race. Just then is when Chancet actually jumped over to his left lead. And when he jumped over to his left lead, he spurted, did one little more spurt, stick his nose in front. But he's got tricky action, not the smoothest action. He kicks his left leg, kind of high, but he's very talented. They just don't, you just don't know how good any of these horses are yet, because it's been a crazy year with, you know, injuries, and like I said, a lot of I'm going to lean towards the horses that are working and running.
What about Green Light Go?
Governor Morris has worked.
What about Green Light Go?
What's that?
What about Green Light Go?
Green Light Go. He's definitely in the top 12. I love that horse. I don't know how far he wants to go. I don't know if he got beat in the Champagne. Because I mean there's a lot of speed in his pedigree. It's a question, but the Champagne I don't hold against him at all, because there's no way in the world that horse wants to be on the lead. I mean, he showed in his earlier races that he's got a good kick. He can run on. He can make a big move on the turn. He's got really good action. I like the way he moves. And to stretch out to a mile and be on and be on the lead, I didn't like that at all. I said, oh God, I think it was a terrible ride. There's no way in the world that horse should have been on the lead. And I thought he hung in there pretty good. He hung tough to get second. He just was no match for the winner. But I'm still very impressed with him. And the funny thing is, I'll look at horses' pedigrees, and I'll look and I'll say, wow, look at all the stamina. I like this. Oh, you know, his second damage bite, touch gold. He's got stamina here. Yeah, and I can't help but look. I don't pay any attention to it. But, you know, when you get the equine line reports and you get the pedigree query reports, you know, they give you the dosage. Yeah, I look up. I see the horse's dosage is 8. I said, what? I can't. I completely ignore dosage now. I just go by what I, you know, what I feel, what I see in a horse's pedigree. I don't go by dosage. Dosage is like so, you know, everybody used to swear by it, but I don't go by it anymore.
No, era has passed.
A lot of these horses that have tons of stamina in their pedigree. They got dosages of 6, 7, 8. I said, you know, back in the old days, you know, back in the 80s, if a horse had a dosage of 5, you completely threw him out. He had no shot. That's how strong, you remember how strong dosage was back then.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
And then if you were a dual qualifier, you practically, you put the roses on him. You know, I mean, they come up with all these things. Now, nobody pays any attention to it anymore.
No.
Yeah, I see somebody's taken over, you know,
dosage
now, and he's an Englishman, and like he put 4 stallions, and there, 3 of them are English stallions. Darshan, who cares about those horses? So I mean, I don't know what to make of dosage. All I know is I see horses with tons of stamina, you know, and they have ridiculously high dosages. So I pay no attention to that.
No, it's a completely. I mean, I will say that when I was creating Derby Trail and when I first, you know, started to do the kinds of research that, you know, I tried in the same vein that John White has got his strike system. I was trying to create my own, you know, Derby profiles and I read all of it, Dr. Roman, I think when Steve Roman went to Costa Rica, I think that was the first indication that we should.
Right.
That was the first concern. Wait a minute, something's this may not no not at all. He retired from everything.
Yeah, well, he gave doses just such a long time ago. But he was, you know, he.
I know,
like
it's
an
a long time already. Well, and there were some things about it that made sense, and you know, even the center of distribution and all of that aspect. It would be funny to revisit and talk to, you know, people about, you know, how, you know, I'm sure it's not the only theory and evaluative method that has come and gone, you know, over the generations.
No, but there was none that had such a major impact on the sport. I remember, by the way, every year, it was so funny, every year, when if you told a trainer that his horse's dosage was like 1.38, they were thrilled. They said, oh, that's great news. And they'd come out and say, oh, my horse has got the dosage or so. Then, like the next year, if you went to the same trainer and says that your Derby horse has a dosage of 6, you say, who cares about dosage? Dosage means absolutely nothing. You know,
well, that's like Dale.
Dosage when their horses have good numbers, but if
right.
The horse has bad numbers, the same trainers would say that it's a piece of garbage.
Well, that's Dale. I mean, I kid him all the time because Dale's got he's got no interest in speed figures when his horses are slow, and then he mentions the figures when the horse. When the horse is fast, it's very
right. Well, every one of Dale's 2-year-olds is going to win the Derby. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what their speed figures are.
By the way, I don't know if you were listening.
One of these years, he'll get it done. I mean, he might get it done with Dennis.
I agree.
I mean, I'd like to see. Yep. I might drop him a text or so just to see what the horse's status is. Or yeah, actually, you know what?
He's doing great.
You know what?
I talked to him this morning.
You know what? You know, I'll contact Jason. Jason Luch, I'll ask him what's going on with that horse.
He's doing great. I talked to I don't know if you heard what or saw what I put out this morning, but a listener by the name of Dave Kramer, DJ Kramer, wrote to me yesterday and asked me, you know, where is Shackelford? He's disappeared from the Darby Dan roster, and he's now, and then I looked on Stallion Register, and he disappeared from Stallion Register, and there was no word. So I asked, you know, I sent a note to Dale. I said, what do you know? And he said, well, he's been sold to Korea. And he's going to go stand in Korea. And as it happens, you know, while we were just exchanging pleasantries, you know, I said, how's the big Colt? He said, he's doing just great. So,
I think I need more verification than that. I think, I want more details on what great means. You know, like I said, it's time for this horse to start working out. So if he's doing great, or at least be close to it. I just want to see. He doesn't need a lot, you know, because he's sort of runs a lot, but in some ways he hasn't run. How many times he's finished the races? You know, it's different from how many times he started the race. But we'll see. You know, we'll see if he's doing well. You know, listen, he could be the best of them all.
Well, exactly.
I mean, Dale told me, as he told the rest of the world about this horse, you know, a long time ago. But he's been as impressive as anybody. You know, when he runs his race, when he doesn't screw up somehow. I mean, can't blame him. I mean, you know, when a horse clips heels, there's nothing you can do about it.
No,
some horses do break poorly. You know, you stumble at the start. It's not his fault. But I just want to see how we come back. If he comes back first time out and runs big, then he could be a very legitimate number one, you know, early Derby favorite. You know, he's got the pedigree.
Undoubtedly.
He's got the style. He's got everything. And, you know, if you start looking at the Derby gods, you know, one of these years, you know, Dale, you know, he's been trying for this his entire life. You're talking about a guy who grew up three blocks from Churchill Downs, spent his entire childhood, you know, at his father's barn where he is now. He's been there his entire life. It's all he's ever dreamt about his whole life is to win the Derby. So, I mean, somewhere along the line, the Derby gods have to start paying attention. And, you know, I've gotten
necessarily
stuck into it many, many years when I thought that,
I picked three in a row of them. I came very close. I thought he was on the doorstep.
It happened with not this time, but it wasn't that time.
No. No, he came a lot closer, obviously, with the
starters. You know, then he had that other horse. Was it Brody's Cause? I thought he was going to be something special. And you know, he's had a lot of horses on the. But you know, if you look at the horses that he's run in the money in the Derby with, they're not the horses you would expect. You know, you're talking about one of them was a grass horse, and the other one, well, they're both grass horses. The two horses he finished in the money in the Derby were both grass horses.
No, agreed.
You know, Patio Prado and Dolahan.
Yep. Well.
So, you know, they, you know, but he's had a lot of horses on Derby. One of these years he's going to do it. Maybe this will be the year. If I can get good reports from him, you know, he'd be right up there. I don't know. I'm grasping for straws.
Well, you got. We can't talk about it now because we're done for today. But there's obviously with those four maiden races at Gulfstream on Saturday, two at six furlongs, two at a mile, all boys, and then there's the allowance race as well. Plenty of interesting runners that might even be produced this weekend.
Yeah, I'm looking for them. I'm looking for them anywhere I can find them. So. You know, you start looking at these maiden races. You know, six furlong maiden races, you know, if they're first time starters, they're pretty much up against it, you know, if they haven't run it too. But, it's about time for these horses to start breaking, you know, you want to start breaking your maidens by January. But at least, if you got some kind of foundation, I still like to look at 2-year-old foundation. You know, I can't give up the old ways completely. I know we have Justify and all those kind of horses, but I gotta stick to some kind of criteria.
Exactly. Well, you keep working, and we'll catch up next week. Steve Haskin, everybody. We'll have the LeCompte to talk about when we talk next week. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. We've got weekend preview, of course, and opening at Sam Houston. Probably talk to Mary Rampolini and much, much more. Good luck with your playing today, everybody. Going to wish Eric Cancel and Minute Mouse a safe trip today. Going 6.5 in the third at Aqueduct. Thanks to Steve and Dick and Tony. Fun morning. Kind of a chatty morning. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.